Listening to Servcast with your hosts William Lamb and Tyler Shores. Servcast is dedicated to challenging those who have a desire to serve, lead, and make the world a better place through the love of Jesus Christ. And now, here's William and Tyler.
Welcome back to Servcast. My name's Tyler, and I'm here with your host and my friend William. Hey, man, so we've been on this sports kick lately. Have you watched any basketball here recently?
I mean, who hasn't? You know, North Carolina and Kentucky, right?
Whew, what a game.
The last shot, what was it, 0.2 seconds or something like that?
0.3, actually.
0.3 seconds.
Yeah.
And who was the guy that shot that for North Carolina?
That was Luke May, the walk-on from Huntersville.
Okay, not just a walk-on, Tyler. How about an average of 5.5 points per game, 12-minute average per game?
Yeah. Yeah, right? I mean, he's off the bench for him. So, I mean, coming in clutch, he's definitely not one of, like, when you think of North Carolina basketball this year, you don't necessarily think Luke May. Well, at least you didn't.
You do now. Yeah.
So.
And actually, I think I caught on one of the news outlets was talking about, you know, he actually went to class the next Monday morning and got a standing ovation by his classmates and his peers.
I saw that. So. You know, the video they were showing was a Snapchat. Like, just so that's it's funny. Not like there was a reporter, like, hiding out in his class TV. Like, just some student. I mean, that's news today, right? It's Snapchat. But, yeah, that was really impressive. I would not have gone to – I mean, I had very – I mean – things that were far less significant than what he had gone through the night before keep me out of 8 a.m. classes.
Yeah,
so
that's funny.
Kudos to him.
And we're going to talk a little bit about education today. One of our guests is you know, an educator, mm-hmm. and we're also going to talk about mentoring and that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, we are. Really excited about our guest today. But real quick to you, man. So do you have mentors? Do you still get advice? I mean, you're a dad. You have grown children. You've been in the education game for some years.
Yeah.
Do you still have that person in your life?
I do have a couple of mentors that are still alive. You know, most of my mentors have passed now, that's the sad part of it. I'm trying to, you know, bag a couple of more. But interesting enough, Tyler, you know, one of my mentors is actually younger than me. And so, you know, that's an interesting twist to the whole mentoring game as well.
Okay.
We'll dig into that a little bit with our guests. But I think it's about the willingness to listen and the willingness to learn, and mm-hmm. you know, because people have different situations, different circumstances, different scenarios. But I'm excited about our guest today because this guy, man, he is a mentor to many people,
yeah.
and we hear that over and over and over. He hasn't told me that. I hear that from people that
yeah.
he has mentored, yeah. and so that's the goal.
So who's with us today?
Dr. Bill Cam. Dr. Bill Cam is the Director of Graduate Programs and Education at Lee University, and he is coming up next.
Great. We have a great show planned for you. Stick around. With Servcast in the studio with Dr. Bill Cam.
Bill, welcome. We're glad you're here, man.
It's exciting to be here. I'm honored. Thank you.
So now, on the lead-in, I talked about your role at Lee University as Director of Graduate Programs in Education.
Correct.
But you also teach in the classroom. What do you teach here?
I do. My emphasis is in reading, so I work with juniors and seniors and also with methods students. That's the semester before they go student teaching. But I love working with Gateway class, so I have a freshman class, and then been able to follow this particular Gateway class into benevolence. Mm. So I get to work on both ends of the spectrum. Also teach a intro to teaching class, so kind of get a chance to bookend, if you will, those who are mm-hmm. starting their education and those who are kind of wrapping things up.
Now, how long have you been at Lee?
This is my 10th year.
Wow. So Tyler, did you catch this? Now, he's been 30 years in the business prior to coming to Lee, right? So 30 plus
yeah.
10 is 40, right? Got it.
And I'm only 39 years old, which isn't amazing.
So they call that a field experience, right? That's the fancy word for it.
Field experience. That's right. So your work prior to coming to Lee was in private education, right?
It was in a number of different states with a number of different schools, but okay. Serving as administrator in three different schools.
So why education, Bill? Why are you in this field and how did you get here?
That's actually a good question that I've wondered myself. When I started in my undergraduate, education was not what I was thinking. I didn't really have any stellar teachers, And so I hadn't really put education at the top of my list. I wasn't well advised in my undergraduate, and by the time I was a junior, the advisor who did talk with me said, looks like you're going for the education route, mm-hmm. which threw me for a little bit of a loop. But then I thought, okay, I can be a teacher. And what I found out was I love teaching. I really enjoy working with students. I loved administration even more, where I could invest in not just students but also faculty. Mm-hmm. That became, I think, my real goal was to train faculty members to be better teachers. So we did all kinds of things with my faculties, and I'd always make certain that I hired innovators, mm-hmm. creative personalities, and we had some dynamite mm-hmm. years together.
So how'd you get to Lee University? I mean, 30 years in the business, and now you're 10 years in educating educators. How'd you get here?
I had the last administration job I had, I was working on my doctorate. We decided to kind of go in different directions, the school and I. And so for a period of time, I was without work. I was actually finishing up my doctorate and took a short stint at a community college. Mm-hmm. Really enjoyed that and realized that working on with adults was exciting. Applied for the position here. We didn't know much about Lee, but we found it online. Mm-hmm. And my wife said, this looks like a job that was created for you.
Oh, wow.
Made the application, was accepted into the teaching position. Interestingly enough, having worked with middle schoolers and elementary students for so long, about my third lecture here, I realized I didn't have enough material to finish the class. And I went into this silent panic inside where I had like 20 minutes left. It was a summer session. And then it dawned on me, I don't have to hold on to them. Hmm. I can dismiss them. They're not going to break out into a fight in the hallway.
That's fine.
It was excellent. I thought, I have arrived. And ever since then, I've thoroughly loved teaching at a university level.
That's awesome. Well, we hope you stay. I mean, you still...
I'm excited about staying.
39 years old, you're still young.
And you know, yes, yes. I actually have students or children older than me now. But one of the things I do tell parents when they come in with their freshmen, after 10 years, you should kind of begin to wane on enthusiasm for an institution. And I just haven't. This is as exciting here today as it was when I first arrived. Students are kind. Students are helpful. Faculty are kind and helpful. They're involved and interested. Just recently, we had to address the situation with a student. So I was meeting with the classroom teacher who was a supervisor. And after we were all done, the classroom teacher looked at me and the other professor there and said, I didn't graduate from Lee University, but I wish I would have had professors who were as invested in me as you are in this particular student. Mm-hmm. And I realized we weren't doing anything different. It's mm-hmm. just what we always do. And mm-hmm. definitely not an exception. All of our faculty mm-hmm. members are like that.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about educators for a few minutes. You know, we're going to get to mentoring here in a little while, but let's talk about educators in general. What are some challenges that educators are facing in present day, you know, as they try to do this teaching business and do it well?
Change. Mm. Everything changes. Education is very fluid. We're always coming up with new acronyms to confuse. And we worry a lot about change. In my estimation, quite honestly, I think we overtest. But even with that, we need to be investing in our students more. And so I think teachers want to do that. They don't want to be policemen. They don't want to be just assessors. They really want to share their love of the subject matter and teaching. And so I think that's what many teachers wrestle with, appropriate amount of time to actually teach.
So how do these teachers keep their sanity in some ways? And, you know, what kind of joy do they have that keeps them, coming back over and over and over to do this teaching business?
It's because teachers get to invest. Very few careers have the investment potential that teachers do.
Okay.
And you can change a life. It's been said, sticks and stones might break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That's mm-hmm. a lie. Mm-hmm. Words can kill.
Yeah.
And we've seen that happen. But words can also change a person's life. And to be able to be in an environment with students who are eager, or maybe they're not eager, but they're there. Mm-hmm. We can speak life into them, where very few careers have that opportunity. I tell our teacher candidates that teaching is really a calling. More often than not, once a parent knows that you love their child, they will share with you things that they might not share with anybody else. Mm-hmm. But they are willing to make themselves vulnerable to you as a teacher because they know you love their child. Mm-hmm. And so teaching really does become ministry. Mm-hmm. I mentioned to our teacher candidates that the students in the classroom are obviously the ones you want to be praying for and encouraging in a variety of ways every day. Even in a public setting, you can do that. You don't have to use the name of Jesus, but you can encourage them in so many ways. But then also those forgotten populations, if you will, of parents and then fellow teachers. There's a lot of fellow teachers that are hurting that need encouragement. Mm-hmm. And so teaching is truly a ministry. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. You know, calling really does affect all of us. And I think the reality is that sometimes people might spend their whole lifetime without catching that calling. And at Lee University, I know from a distance watching, you know, this education business that we're helping students to understand that, man, they've got something to offer. And if it's education, we want you to do it and do it well, right?
Exactly. One of the things I mentioned to our students is a career is what you're paid for. A calling is what you're made for. Mm. And when the two of those intersect, that's what makes you excited about getting up on a Monday morning. Mm-hmm. And heading off to work.
Year after year after year.
Year after year.
Yeah. And that's the good stuff, man. So for those of us who are, well, I mean, I'm an educator with you, but for those persons who are listening to our podcast that might not be educators, you know, what are some ways that they can support this education business? You know, I mean, it's not going to go away. Even with more acronyms and more change and all of that occurring, education's here to stay. What are some ways that, you know, the general population can you know, make a difference in the education business by making a difference in the educators? Mm-hmm.
I don't want to sound cliche-ish, but praying for our educators particularly. Mm-hmm. They have a tough job, and even though they might have more time off than, say, a typical business person, they don't have the business lunches. They've got 15 minutes to eat, and mm-hmm. they're watching 120 kids. Mm-hmm. So It's a difficult challenge, and to be able to encourage, whether it's with a note saying, I appreciate your ministry, I appreciate the work that you're doing, praying for them, I think it's great to come alongside a teacher and say, you know, how can I help? What can I do mm-hmm. In the classroom, or what are some of the things that you need? I encourage our students to find someone who loves garage sales. Give them $10, tell them to get as many things as they can, book-wise or mm-hmm. supply-wise mm-hmm. for the classroom. Mm-hmm. Some people live for that kind of thing. Now, you would have to drag me kicking and screaming to a yard sale, but I'm a guy.
We'll try that. That'll be fun.
But just doing those kinds of practical things. Mm-hmm. A gift card or a packed lunch, just mm-hmm. something to say thank you. Mm-hmm. Means a whole lot. A note is powerful. A handwritten note saying, I see what you do and I appreciate what you do is meaningful.
I mean, the reality is, especially in, you know, early education years, some of those teachers will spend more time with a parent's child than that parent will.
That's exactly
right. At least while that child's awake.
That's exactly right.
You know, and so that's a challenging business. You know, my wife, she was a stay-home mom whenever our boys were in school. And she was the laminating mom at Oak Grove Elementary. I mean, it was like, you know, okay, the laminating mom, that's like the rule of the school. You get to do whatever you want to do whenever you want to do it, because every teacher in early education has tons of laminating that needs to be done. And so, you know, we also want to encourage, you know, parents that have the opportunity to be involved in your students' lives in the education business. Go to the school. Spend time with them. I mean, schools are open to that, right?
Exactly. And I would encourage, we see a drop-off about middle grades. The students don't necessarily want their parent in the classroom. That can be a little bit awkward or embarrassing. But there's still many, many things that a parent can do. Laminating,
yep.
Grading papers, cutting things out, getting things ready, mm-hmm. all manner of things. And so just mm-hmm. to stop to tutor even mm-hmm. sometimes, just to stop into the administrator's office or to talk with your child's teacher and say, my child doesn't want me in the classroom, but what are some of the other things that I can do? Mm-hmm. All the way on up through high school, mm-hmm. we see a real drop off after lower elementary of parents participating. Mm-hmm. And so the more that you can do physically, the better.
And the reality is, for parents, I mean, you know, I miss my children in their younger age. I'm enjoying, you know, this. I have three sons and, you know, and a daughter-in-law. So I'm enjoying this relationship now, you know, because we're more of friends and more so than a dad kind of a thing. You know, always a dad, but more into the friendship level. But man, those are short-lived years in school. So that is good stuff. Let's turn gears, Bill. Let's shift from education for a few minutes to our topic today, really this whole mentoring business. You know, as I mentioned on the lead in, I mean, you're not just an educator, you're a mentor. And, you know, you've got a ton of folks that we think, Tyler knows some of them, I know some of them, that consider you to be a real trusted mentor, a trusted voice in their life. We see that on a regular basis. So let me ask you a question going into that. You know, do you perceive a difference or an overlap between the call to be an educator and the call to be a mentor? What does it look like? Is it different?
Yes, there are many, many differences, but I think there is some strong overlap. One of the things that I have always encouraged my faculty in, as well as the students, is to look for those things in a child and a young person to call forth that they might not see themselves. And I think that's a powerful, powerful mentoring tool. It's also a powerful educating tool. More often than not, a child or a young person or an adult like you and I don't see what we're capable of. I love to tell this story. My wife and I have been married 43 years.
Wow. 39. But he's not 39, Tyler.
I wasn't a math major. I don't. Maybe okay. Someone can. Grayson, get your calculator.
On our 36th anniversary, we went out to a restaurant to eat, and we were kind of just talking. And I said to my bride, "I want to tell you 36 reasons why I love you." Hmm. And so I don't think I ever got to 36. I was just kind of rattling off some things. And it was sort of an awkward end to the conversation because our food arrived, first of all. But then she said, "I'm just going to have to think about this for a while." Didn't quite know what she meant by that. But the next day, she sent me an email, 36 Reasons Why I Love You.
Oh, wow.
And I have that posted in my office because she sees in me what I don't necessarily see in myself. Hmm. It makes me want to be a better husband, a better father, a better son, a better man. Mm-hmm. And I there's such value in that, to be able to call forth in other people what you mm-hmm. see that they don't necessarily do. And to me, that's the essence of teaching, and I think it's the essence of mentoring.
So how do you get to that level? How do you do that? I mean, how do you emerge into a mentor role?
I think age has something to do with it. Mm-hmm. I've found that more people come to me now that I'm a little bit older and want to sit down and have coffee and talk and meet on a regular basis. But I don't think that age necessarily has anything to do with it. For me, what's been most effective is just learning how to listen better. Hmm. For so long, I think I wanted to give people answers. I thought they came to me for answers. No one came to me for answers. They often just wanted to talk things through. More often than not, they already knew, or as they talked, they understood what needed to happen. Mm-hmm. And so I find myself trying to ask better questions, more open-ended questions, and not give answers, but to just ask them to explore a little bit mm-hmm. Some aspect that they might not have thought of before. Mm-hmm.
So are there different levels of the mentoring relationship, you know? Do people just kind of move out of a mentor-y role eventually, or a mentee role eventually, you know, where you've kind of mentored them as much as you can? Or does that move into a whole different level? What does that look like?
That's actually a very interesting question, because I've learned that mentoring is fluid and you have to be ready for change just like you do in education. Mm-hmm. Change is going to take place. Mm-hmm. You're going to be able to talk to some people and you think, wow, we're really making some great grounds here. And then you never hear from them again.
Right.
You know, they've moved on to something else. There's several young men that I work with now that I think, gosh, you guys know more than I do at this point. But we still just enjoy the camaraderie of getting together and talking, bouncing ideas off of one another and thinking through things. So fluidness, I think, is the real key.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. I guess I really don't consider myself a mentor to many. I just want to be a good listener and enjoy the fellowship. I, like you, have three sons.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to, in my profession, in the elementary, middle grades education, we work with a preponderance of young ladies. I don't know how a young lady thinks.
Mm-hmm.
I don't purport to know how a young lady thinks, but I do have some ideas of how young men think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think then we can talk about those kinds of things and I can explore those better. So much of it started with my own sons when they said, Dad, could we just talk and have an opportunity, just let me bounce some ideas off of you. And I saw the value in that as son and father relationship. And I've known that own, you know, value in my own life.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, I love this particular story, and I don't know if I can explain it adequately. I was in an account, sort of an accountability group back in Charlotte. There'd be seven or eight of us that would get together on a regular basis for breakfast. Sometimes it'd be more, sometimes less. One time there was just two of us that showed up. And while we were having breakfast, he drew on a napkin a coffin. And he pushed the coffin napkin over to me and said, so, who do you want to carry your coffin?
Mm.
And I thought, that is so macabre. You know, I was in my 30s. I wasn't thinking about death. And here suddenly, I thought, this is really, really odd. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought, who would be the person or the people that I'd want to honor with what I would consider my final request? Who are those men and women who've invested in me over the years that I would want to recognize that way? And over the years now, I've contacted each person that I would see giving that honor to. Now, some of them have gone on to glory. Some are older than me. Several are younger than I am. But it's been a powerful way of reconnecting and saying thank you. That's the thing that I've come to realize more and more, how important it is to say thank you to the men and the women who've invested in us.
So let me ask you another question then about that. You've found time in your busy schedule from being an administrator, being a classroom teacher, to actually be a faculty sponsor for one of our service clubs here, Big Pal, Little Pal. So why do you think it's so important that we establish the mentor, you know, role? And, you know, does everybody have to have a mentor?
That's a great question. I would say, yes, everyone can benefit from a mentor. And it can take all different kinds of forms. It might be a grandparent that you just love sitting down and talking with. It could be a mom or a dad, but often it needs to be just a little bit removed from that.
Mm-hmm.
I think our RAs and RDs do an amazing job at listening, helping people walk through some difficult times. Many of our professors are also excellent at that. Just taking time to listen.
Mm-hmm.
When students come in, yes, we can see it as an interruption, but we can also see it as, this is our job. This is what we are called to do.
Mm-hmm.
I love that when students come in comfortable enough just to sit down and say, can I talk for just a little bit with you about something? And whatever it is, very, very minor or very, very major, that says volumes to me. Now, it might only happen once, might happen regularly. I have people who say, can we get coffee on a regular basis? And I tell my students I live on coffee and conversation. I don't know what would happen if they closed down Dunkin' on campus. I would be a lonely, lonely person. But just to go up there and to sit and talk, generally I'll ask me a question that makes my brain hurt, which is a fun way of just getting them to go beyond the surface and think deeply about something.
Now, do you have to be in a relationship with somebody to get to that level quickly, or is that just one of your start taglines, man?
That's one of my start taglines, and I found I can use it with someone who I just met. Hmm. Now, woo's one of my top strengths, and so it doesn't really bother me if they just kind of look at me and you know, think bizarre thoughts and wander off. I can live with that. But generally speaking, it's just a great way to start a conversation. I've found that it's a challenge for men to get below the surface of sports or weather. And I don't follow the weather, and I'm not a great sports guy. So they know that if they're going to be talking with me, we have to go to something other than those two. Mm-hmm. And in some ways that's been a real disadvantage, but in some ways it's been a real advantage too.
So what are challenges that you face as a mentor?
Challenges I face as a mentor. Time. Mm-hmm. Finding the quality time. My schedule, my secretary kind of rolls her eyes at me now because I've gotten so booked. But I love it, and it's all doing things that I love. But when people come and want some time, it's difficult to carve out enough.
Other challenges, or is that pretty much the main difficulty when it comes to this balance of relationship?
I think, too, when they come to me with a concern that is more than I think I can really handle, mm-hmm. when it really does need to be a counseling situation, mm-hmm. or a medical situation. And I have those every now and then, and trying to get them the help that they need, that's a challenge.
So for just, again, the general population out here, you know, what would you say to them to encourage them that, and what are some practical ways in which they can find, you know, people with needs and begin to actually be salt and light and, you know, be the hands and feet of Jesus to make a difference? What are you seeing there?
My immediate reaction is to look for the outliers.
Okay.
There's a lot of people who are well-connected. They don't seem to really, they seem to have plenty of people to talk with. But there's always those that are sort of on the outlying fringes. To come alongside of them and just to sit down and strike up a conversation. I love going into the cafeteria and finding someone sitting by themselves.
Yeah.
Now, some of the conversations have been really, really awkward. Sat with one young man, didn't say a word the entire lunch. It was the longest 20 minutes it took to eat.
That takes some discipline right there. Just sit across from
exactly.
someone and absolutely refuse to talk.
Yeah. Yeah. How many times did you ask him the question? Please ask me something that makes my brain hurt.
And I didn't have that question formulated at that point, and I wish I would have. Maybe that's what caused me to come up with that question.
Yeah.
I recently read about a high school student who formed a club, and the club's sole purpose is to find people sitting by themselves at lunch.
Wow. Yeah.
And that's what the club does, is they go around and they find people and they sit down and strike up conversations.
And honestly, be it high school, be it college, cafeteria is the loneliest place in the world.
It definitely can be. It mm-hmm. definitely can be. And what a ministry. Mm-hmm. What an opportunity to meet someone new. And I'll tell my students too, the university is one of the few places that you can sit down with someone of the opposite sex and carry on a conversation and not have it misread. Mm-hmm. You've always got to be careful there. Mm-hmm. But by the same token, you can't do that in the business world. Mm-hmm. Or once you're out of college, that's pretty much mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. And so just, like I say, there's always caution. But to find people, someone sitting by themselves and to say, do you mind if I sit with you? Mm-hmm. It's great. What's the worst they can say? No, I've had that happen.
Or they cannot say anything.
Or they cannot say anything. And I've had that happen too.
That is funny. Dr. Cam, my friend Bill, you know, we have just a couple of minutes left on this episode today. What encouraging words can you give to people who might think, you know what, I don't have the guts to befriend myself to somebody who can be my mentor, but I need one. You know, I don't have, the trust is not there for me to be able to say to somebody, hey, I need your help. You know, we might have somebody listen to this episode that wants a mentor, but doesn't know how to get one, doesn't know how to ask for one. What words might you say or to encourage them to, our friend Gary Riggins, who was your predecessor, I guess, in the graduate program director, one of his favorite, he was one of my mentors and still is, and one of his favorite lines is, trust is a risk survived. You don't know the outcome until you risk the trust factor. So what are some encouraging thoughts you might can give to somebody who says, you know what, I need some help, but I don't know how to get there?
I think I would encourage him to just to pray about it and say, God, open my eyes.
Yeah.
Who is it that you want me to make myself vulnerable to?
Mm-hmm.
It might start with a pastor. It might start with a teacher. Those are generally two very trusted professions mm-hmm. that often can help network you into somebody. But more often than not, I think it's, Lord, show me the person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God wants us to be connected even more than we want to be. Mm-hmm. And I think he's probably got someone in store for you, you know, even as you open that with that prayer.
Mm-hmm. A friend of mine, his name's Eric. He pastors churches in Kentucky. And I recently saw on his one of his Instagram posts, you know, from his message on a Sunday. And he said that the enemy's intent is to put you into isolation so he can annihilate you.
Exactly.
You know, and we weren't created to live in isolation,
yeah.
right?
No one's intended to be a lone ranger. Yeah. We all need to be connected.
Good stuff. Bill, thanks for taking some time out of your busy schedule to meet with us today. You know, I'm glad you're here, and maybe we can get you back down in Servcast at some point and let you rant some more. I always enjoy listening to you.
Thank you very much. It's been an honor. Appreciate it.
All right, stick around. We'll be right back with the show close. Back in our final segment of this episode, William, I mean, what a great conversation. I mean, I've had the pleasure to interact with Dr. Cam some, and we actually there was a few weeks ago, I guess, or here recently, we were doing an event at one of the guys' dorms, and mm-hmm. And I got an invitation to come and speak in like a small group setting, and I looked at the email and I saw the other people who got that invitation. I saw Dr. William Cam, Dr. William Lamb, Skip Jenkins. I'm like, my Lord, what have I gotten myself into agreeing to this thing that I got to sit on a panel with these guys? But, you know, the thing about it, about him, I mean, he just loves people.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, if you want to talk about education, you want to talk about mentoring, like, he's got to love people, man. And I mean, the mechanics of it will work itself out from there, I think. Mm-hmm. So, really appreciate that. I mean, we can have guests like him who are just so real. I mean, they yeah. live the stuff they're talking about, and yeah. and we're very fortunate to be in such close proximity to them. So,
you know, I'm convinced, Tyler, that some people just don't sleep much, and I guess Bill Cam is probably one of those people that doesn't sleep much, because I know I've been to the gym here at Lee early mornings, you know, as early as 5:30, and Bill Cam's in there, you know. I'm running, he's pumping iron.
Hey, sharpening the saw, I read that somewhere. You gotta sharpen the saw.
Yeah, you know, and so I know his life is driven to make it work for somebody else. And as I was listening to him today, you know, I pitched out a couple of mentors that I've had. Cliff Schimmels was one of those, you know. Gary Riggins is still a mentor. I know if I need insight and I need information, I need somebody to help me to reflect on something, you know, Gary's going to be there. He's like Bill. He's not going to tell me what to do so often as much as let me discover what I need to do and help guide me into a safe place where I can discover what I need to do. You know, shipwrecks, I think, happen because people, you know, are not looking at, you know, the terrain or the seas ahead. They don't see what's happening, you know, and they're not focused in on the realities. And the mentor helps us to be able to, as Bill Cam said, see what we don't know exists there. It's there. Three phrases that came to mind as he was talking today. Listen well. You know, he says he just wants to listen to people. Man, that is a ministry in and of itself, just taking time to listen to people. And again, as I say it all the time, you know, look for the not so obvious, listen for what people can't tell you. Second phrase came to mind was to learn well. And in this exchange of education and the ability to actually listen to somebody and trust their voice, but also, you know, learn in that process. There's tons of information that's being posited back and forth. And if we're not in a learning mode, so many times we miss real live instruction that would be transformational for us. But we miss it because we're not in a mode to learn. And the third phrase that came to mind is teach well. So listen well, learn well, so you can teach well. You know, because you know, all of us are teaching something at some point in the game to somebody. Somebody's learning something from us. My son, Tyler, he's the oldest, and I'll never forget it. My wife yelled at me one day. Now, you got to understand, she's the most gentle angel in the whole wide world.
Oh, she's a saint.
She is a saint. And she said to me one day when I came home from work, she said, "It's all your fault." And I said, "What do you mean it's all my fault?" And she said, "Tyler, it's all your fault." And I'm like, "He's your son too." And she said, "No, Tyler spit on the window of the Suburban today." I think Tyler may have been 11 years old. I don't know. And I was like, "What do you mean he spit on the window of the Suburban?" She said, "He learned that from you." You know, all little boys play baseball, right? I mean, spitting's part of the game.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Man, I have a terrible spitting habit. I mean, I spit all the time. Tyler learned that from me. You know, that's kind of just a cool little story. But the reality is, what behaviors are people learning from you? Because most everything that we do in life is a learned behavior. We got it from somewhere, either good, bad, or ugly. The question is, you know, are we keeping the good stuff and getting rid of the bad stuff? And I think mentors help us to make sense of it so that we can, in fact, do that. Listen, learn, and teach well. We say this all the time on Surfcast, and I'll say it again, and I'll say it for the rest of the time that we visit each week. You know, you're made for more. You're made to make an impact in the world, to make a difference. So you're listening to us today and you need a mentor. We're going to, you know, pray along with you that God would just help you to look past the difficulty and the struggle, find somebody that you can trust, or at least that you can risk trusting them. And let's say that maybe you have a lot to offer, but you've not really seen yourself in the role of a mentor. Risk it. Somebody out there simply needs you, as Bill said, to drink coffee, you know, have a conversation, and listen. And listening does make a huge impact in people's lives. So, hey, as you go about your day, remember, you're made for more, and we look forward to being with you next time here on Surfcast.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Surfcast. The thoughts and opinions expressed on Surfcast are those of William Lamb, Tyler Shores, their guests, and no one else. Until next time, this is Surfcast, signing off from Studio 22.